Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This week, we're reviewing Aladdin 2019, Brightburn, and Booksmart. And our topic this week, when does fan outrage turn into entitlement? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today, I'm my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling awfully entitled to a free podcast. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
You went back?
Huh?
Didn't you just do like a whole different hello thing?
Oh, I think I did one hello once before. Okay. I don't know. Switch it up. You don't want it to be the same thing every time.
That's what we've been telling you.
People like things to be the same. That's our whole topic this week. They don't want anything to deviate from what they expect.
Okay. Hello, hello.
Hey. Well, you freaking just did the exact same thing
well, you already did. No, I did. I sang it
a little bit the last time. It's a holiday week here in the States, so we're doing a bit of an abbreviated version of the show this week. Some news, a few reviews, some laughs, and then we're out.
Because we don't want to be here? Is that?
I don't. You guys, we took a vote and I lost.
I kind of forgot about it. I was regretting my decision.
Let's take the week off, guys. It's a holiday week. It's the best time to do it. And you guys are all like, no, let's go ahead and do the podcast. I mean, you got to edit, Aaron.
In fairness, like, yeah, I get it. You're right. We voted to do the podcast, but because when the question was posed to us, it was like, well, there's going to be 2 weeks in a row in June. We're not going to be here. So should we do Memorial Day weekend or not? And to us, that's like a setup for Aaron to get ready to yell at us because we're like, no, let's not do Memorial Day weekend. He's like, you monsters, you're lazy. Why aren't you wanting to do it?
That's fair. That is fair. Hey, I just got fun out. I'm doing jury duty tomorrow.
Have fun.
So let's change our topic to why jury duty sucks. But it's the right thing to
do.
For your country.
Can you transfer it to me?
I don't think that's how that
works at all.
That would be pretty cool if you could, because I really want to do it.
But I totally plan on answering all the questions
wrong
wrong with movie quotes. Yeah. We're going to need a bigger boat.
I think Ted Bundy had it right.
Did you watch the movie though? Like, I could understand.
Seriously, Zac Efron. I mean, he really illustrated what it was like to be a psycho.
He was so pretty. I get it.
That's why we like Kim Kardashian. If she killed people, we'd just be like, okay.
Wait, what?
She'd kill him with her booty.
That's a fake booty. Is it?
Is it? I don't even know why I asked that. No, it is not real, Amanda.
You think it's a real booty?
I was like, is it really not real? And then I was like, of course it's not real.
This is really literally one time where we could be, let's go to the tape.
Wow.
Da, 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 da. All right. Well, the scuttlebutt is that Disney is letting Ridley Scott develop a sequel to Alien Covenant, which basically just makes me want to go to space so nobody can hear me scream.
You know, maybe Disney will give him the kind of money he needs to actually complete the story in a way that be fulfilling.
Yeah, we don't need any more of that.
This is so awful.
I want a whole movie where it's just Michael Fassbender playing with his flute.
Please don't remind me of that, because I had taken it out of my memory.
I want a whole movie of him playing with his flute.
That sounds dirty, too.
It was. Did you watch the movie?
I did. It was dirty.
It seemed pretty dirty.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the actual show. The winner of the Game of Homes from last week's Game of Thrones episode was me, suckas. And the winner of the Game of Thrones contest, which was where we put out to everybody that listened and said, hey, you pick who's going to live, who's going to die, who's going to be a White Walker. The winners, it's winners because it was a tie.
It was a tie.
Of Game of Thrones were who?
So we had Kyle Nolan and Jane Peterson.
I know that tied. Her.
Unrelated.
Yeah.
Where do you know her from?
That is my wife.
Did you meet her on the street? Where'd you meet her from?
What?
I don't know.
Don't be weird.
What's happening?
I don't know, but it's like a few minutes. We need to get into the actual podcast. So here is our news roundup this week, all right? Ooh, let me take a breath. True Lies is getting a TV adaptation for Disney Plus. Disney, speaking of, is looking at different ways of incorporating Deadpool into the MCU. That's the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the uninitiated. Including possibly Spider-Man 3, but Sony would rather they use Venom. So there's kind of a back and forth over what to do in that respect, because they own Venom, you understand? John Wick Chapter 4 and Taika Waititi's Akira are both slated for May 21st, 2021. You like how I slowed down just so I didn't butcher the hell out of that and get letters? Coke is bringing back New Coke for Stranger Things 3.
What does that mean?
Oh, you're young. Oh, my God. I forgot mid-20s. You don't know. New Coke was a soft drink in the 80s that you should have Googled before you showed up. But it was a soft drink in the 80s that Coke introduces a new formula for Coke. It lasted, what, John, like 6 weeks?
Yeah, something like that.
And then basically fan outrage led to entitlement, and they felt entitled to the actual Coke, which they got back immediately.
Mm.
They wanted their Coke with the cocaine in it.
Yeah. And I mean, I get that.
Yeah, I get that too. Why wouldn't you want to drink something that takes paint off a car? Also, Dan Aykroyd has written a Ghostbusters prequel series to take place in 1969 because there's nothing Ghostbusters related that Dan Aykroyd does not love. Anthony McCartan is writing a feature adaptation of the documentary Three Identical Strangers about triplets separated at birth. Universal Home Entertainment is using memes as their DVD covers now to try to move product. The new Terminator Dark Fate trailer hit and people actually liked it. What? Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes introduced verified ratings to get a handle on fans faking reviews to bottom out a property. A new Star Wars movie based on Knights of the Old Republic is in the works. Adam Levine is leaving The Voice after 16 seasons. Bye-bye. Stallone is trying to bring Marion Cobretti back in a Cobra TV series with another actor. I'm sorry. Stallone is trying to bring Marion Cobretti back in a Cobra TV series with another actor in the lead. Eddie Murphy, Samuel L. Jackson.
Hey, Sly, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, you. Yeah, you take care. Rocky Rambo 5 is coming soon. Eddie Murphy and Samuel L. Jackson are circling a Grumpy Old Men remake, and the grumpiest old man, Harrison Ford, rightfully proclaimed that when he's dead, so is Indiana Jones. Whew. Of all of that, Johnny boy, what stood out to you or really piqued your interest?
I can't help but enjoy Harrison Ford being like, yeah, when I'm dead, he's dead. Screw you all.
My hero. My absolute hero. People keep telling me that's wrong that he said that. I'm like, it's his. Who can't? I mean, he didn't write it. He didn't produce it. He didn't spend the money on it, but it's his.
But he made that character.
He made that character.
That character is Harrison Ford. Leave it alone.
You know, it was supposed to be my other favorite mustachioed tall man, Tom Selleck, who was supposed to be in that role. And honestly, I don't think he could have made it nearly as iconic.
No, he couldn't. Thank you for saying that. Too many people make the argument that maybe Tom Selleck could have been just a swashbuckling, and I don't think so. Or is it swash?
I don't know, but I don't think so either.
I really do believe if they had to recast it, Bradley Cooper's the guy.
He would be okay, but he is no Harrison Ford. I mean, everything's going to get remade someday.
I see that. It's like remake is movie, right. That's what you did there.
That was cute.
I liked it. Tip of the fedora to you.
Thanks.
What do you got, Amanda? Anything in there like really stand out to you?
Well, now that I know about the Coke, I mean, that's all I needed to know.
You seriously have never heard about New Coke?
I didn't know that it was called New Coke.
Well, you know, Aaron, you should also assume that there are some listeners who haven't heard of the New Coke. So
yeah.
Maybe the fact that you explaining what New Coke was probably a helpful and interesting part of the show.
You're welcome.
I feel like, did I mansplain New Coke? I don't know what I did.
I mean, I didn't take it as mansplaining, but somebody's definitely going to tell you mansplained to me.
It was more like youth-splained.
It was ageism. Yeah. I have some ageism going on right now.
Yeah, that's what that is.
But I'm really excited about Rotten Tomatoes.
Wait, let's go back to New Coke because this is fascinating.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It sucked.
Was that the end of the discussion?
It was like the end of the world at the time, and people acted like it was the end of the world. I swear to God, people were fighting in the street over this.
They're
really?
Like, we're going back to Pepsi.
Pepsi tastes like an ashtray.
What?
Yes.
I don't think you're drinking ashtrays correctly.
That's all I can taste when I drink it.
The ashtray should taste better.
Yeah. I mean, Pepsi's better than Coke.
Cherry Pepsi
I'm
is
sorry.
Better.
You misunderstood that as like an opinion. That's a fact.
No.
That's just a statement.
No.
Yeah, it wasn't a question.
No.
Mm-hmm. Pepsi is the shiznit.
I'm coming up on almost a full year of no soda at all, so I can't even remember.
Even that, you still know that Pepsi's better than Coke.
No.
When I was drinking soda, I drank Diet Pepsi all the time.
That's close enough. It's close enough for a win. That's what
That's
I say.
So much worse for you than regular.
We're not talking about what's good for you or what's bad for you. We're talking about what's better as far as a beverage goes. And if I had a choice, I always went with Pepsi versus Coke.
I always love Diet Pop because if you read the ingredients, You
it's
will
like
finish
a new language.
Yeah, it's like reading Latin. Wow, there's so many things. I don't know what any of them are. I'm sure they're good. Glug glug glug.
Did I just summon a demon?
All right. What was your?
Oh, the Rotten Tomatoes thing. I like that they're making some sort of an effort to try to combat assholes on the internet.
Can you explain how it's working?
Well, I mean, I don't know the specifics of it all, but basically they're trying to combat with the people who are because there's people who are going on posting reviews that are not legitimate.
They're verifying.
So they're
reviews.
Verifying. Yes. Right. They're basically, they have to go through an extra step to ensure that what they're posting is legitimate, that they're a legitimate reviewer, not just somebody who hasn't even seen the movie and wants to go out there and slander a film that they've never seen before.
Really?
Which is common. Now.
I'm curious how they're going to enforce that, but it's a cool concept.
You know, I'm just enjoying it because all the work YouTube boneheads put into becoming actual critics for Rotten Tomatoes, and all of a sudden now anyone can go up there and write their opinion and it matters.
It's a different section.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I see.
If you search
our
names.
I get a headshot. You so get that's, sometimes someone wants to look at my ugly ass.
Oh, a headshot.
Yep.
Yeah, they don't have the button that says add article underneath the poster. Woo-hoo! We do.
Sad thing is people are probably reading theirs more than ours. So,
yeah, that's true.
Look, 6 million hates on Last Jedi. Why isn't it up to 7 million yet? Let's make some more.
I do enjoy this idea of Deadpool showing up in different places in the MCU.
But it's PG-13. Isn't that their concept?
No, well, in the MCU would be PG-13. Right. So any official Marvel Cinematic Universe films would be PG because they don't want to go rated R. So
yeah.
There's still the possibility that they'll make a Deadpool 3 and it'll be rated R. I just get leery about it. John, aren't you a little leery about it a little bit?
I've been looking at a lot of the Deadpool and Spider-Man comics, and like seeing those two work together is just hysterical because, you know, I mean, Deadpool spends half the time in the comics fanboying over Peter Parker and Spider-Man, and then only to like end up covering, like doing all the dirty work Spider-Man won't do behind his back.
I just don't know if I care to see. They went this route with recreating Deadpool in a PG-13, and I still haven't seen it, but I heard it was terrible.
It wasn't terrible. It just wasn't Deadpool.
It wasn't Deadpool, right. Like, yeah. It was just not the same thing, and I don't really want to have a character involved in something when they can't actually be that character that I love. And it's not about the vulgarity. Like, it's not like I need him to say the F word every 5 seconds or he's not my Deadpool. It's just the epitome of who that character is being vulgar and in your face and saying crass comments and all of these different things. And
so I'm fine if they want to have Deadpool pop up in Spider-Man or whatever Avenger movie and he just does a little joke or he helps out for 5 minutes and then he goes off and like he's just somebody he's a hit it and quit it kind of character. I'm fine with that. I really love having a character that's different from everything else. His movies they kind of follow the formula, but they're also their own thing and they're very independent and they're very raunchy and they make fun of the other movie. I love that. I need that. I want that. That's what I want. As long as I don't lose that, I'm happy. But it sounds like Disney's still like, well, I don't know. Maybe we'll do a third one. You think any other franchise they'd be debating if maybe they'd have a third one if they weren't worried about the rating? That's the only reason they're worried about it.
Silly.
Makes me nervous.
I don't want to get as nervous about it. You know, if he shows up in other places, I think it'll be just as fun. He'll be there to just tease the crap out of whoever's starring in the movie so that it really just, like, you know, pokes fun at him.
Well, I'm the most excited about Stallone getting a Cobra TV series. And no, he's not going to be the star.
Of course.
Dude, I love that character, man.
You just love Sly.
Yeah, I do.
A lot.
Why do people feel like that's like a shameful thing to say? Shame, shame, shame. No, I love Sylvester Stallone.
Don't Cersei his life, damn it.
His movies are great.
Cobra is one of my favorites of his.
Wouldn't that be fun to have that the same character, same car, come back and just kick ass again? I think that would be fun.
I would like to see that, only I want to still see it set in the 80s.
Oh. Wouldn't that be kind of a problem, though, because it's the 80s? Therefore, all you're thinking of, that doesn't look like Stallone.
It doesn't need to look like a Stallone. Because most of the people who are going to be watching it won't even remember the movie itself. But if you set it, in the 80s, like they did with... what's the spy show from FX? The Americans.
And, oh yeah, yeah.
And Stranger Things, it'll add a level of not necessarily nostalgia, but a level of making things more difficult, because that's part of the problem with like today's police shows or whatever. It's like, let me just get out my cell phone and I'll look it up right here and right now. And it takes away a lot of like those extra steps we used to have that created great narrative. And setting that into the 80s would have been interesting.
I just saw a tweet from a successful screenwriter, and I can't remember which one it was, but they were like, one of the most complicated things to write into a script now is people not doing everything with their phones, not finding a solution with their phones, not chatting with people like, oh, I need to get a hold of this person. Let me just call them real quick. Like creating problems.
Like real obstructions to.
Right. With cell phones. And it's, I didn't even think about it as much until I read that. And I was like, no, I can 100% can see that. Like you, and if you try to do it, you have to make sure that it's, everything is so legitimate and that it's not just being done because it needs to be done, but because it actually works in the film.
Yeah. Cause let's be honest. If they did a real car chase with cops, the cop would be totally on it, texting while driving. Like the entire time he's chasing him, I'm like, hang on. I'll be home later, baby. I'm, trying to bring down this bad guy. And you have to show text alerts at all turns.
Yeah.
John, you're a big Star Wars nut. Are you excited about Knights of the Old Republic? I know some people are excited. Some people are,
I'm in the middle of the road right now about it. When I see what they're going to actually do, it'll be interesting. The whole concept is very cool because, like, as far as my experience through Knights of the Old Republic is from the comic books. And the comic books had this great kind of sort of feel to it that was kind of like Farscape. Not Farscape. I'm sorry. I'm thinking Serenity. So it's kind of, it felt kind of like Serenity, where things looked a certain way and it had a certain aesthetic to it that was more like the Wild West. And yet there was lightsabers and it worked a little bit better than like the stuff from Serenity. So it'll be an interesting aesthetic. It'll be an interesting show. I at the same time, I'm not sure if I'm ready to see a show that has Jedis running all over the place. One of the great things about them is how mysterious they were in the original movie.
Well, I think Disney figures, well, apparently if you don't have lightsabers, people don't go see Star Wars movies. So they're going to have lightsabers everywhere. Jawas are going to have them. They're going to have Ewoks. Everybody's going to have a lightsaber. Everybody gets a lightsaber. You get a lightsaber.
I want a lightsaber.
Everybody wants one.
Well, I mean, there's some truth to that. One of the games that I played that for a long time that was Star Wars related was Galaxies, which is a massive MMO. And they didn't have Jedis in that game until it was out for 3 or 4 years. And then the game just exploded when they finally allowed Jedis out.
That's my explosion.
Okay.
That was cheesy.
All right. Well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider, or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our show is independently funded, and Patreon does help fans support their favorite podcasts. On the same token, we do offer bonus content exclusively through our Patreon for our supporters. There are different tiers. Donate $1 just to help the show. At $3, we have a bonus monthly podcast called Bad Movie Night, where we discuss a movie that critics and others deem a bad movie, and occasionally a really bad movie, like the next one, The Hurricane Heist. Whoa. There's John's Side Hustle, the half-hour power hour. You can find that there. Then at $5, there is the exclusive monthly bonus episode where we discuss things we won't discuss on a normal regular show, and we often get a little bit more personal. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content previously in your respective tier. Thank you. If you want to support the show, that's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And welcome to our new Patreon supporter, Brandon Morris. Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, Brandon.
And now we've got 3 spoiler-free reviews. We're starting with Booksmart, which we already reviewed once for the South by Southwest episode, so we'll be a little shorter with this one. But we thought it was important to mention it. Caitlin Denver and Beanie Feldstein stars Amy and Molly, two best friends, fast approaching the end of high school. On the eve of their graduation, these two academic superstars and best friends realize they should have worked less and played more, as plenty of hoes and potheads are going to the same schools that they will be going to anyway. Determined not to fall short of the peers, the girls try to cram 4 years of fun and partying into one single night. Booksmart is essentially Superbad. It's a Superbad remake in many ways, which is funny considering Beanie is Jonah Hill's sister.
It is also weird because I didn't know that.
Fun fact. What does Booksmart do different than any other teen comedy about the last party of high school doesn't?
Oh, that's a great question. Ooh, I like it. Well, I don't want to say that it necessarily does anything different about like the structure of the film or even necessarily the jokes, but the way they're able to connect with people feels a little bit different because I don't want this to become like a huge like feminist thing, but the movie is it's like a female hoorah. Like there, you have two leading ladies that are awesome, but they're not your stereotypical women. And so the movie is obviously directed towards women, but it still, I felt, was able to connect with people who had different sexual orientations, different genders, different ethnicities. Like I felt like it was able to connect on a lot of diverse levels, which a lot of those previous iterations weren't able to do. So it was a hoorah that was modernized for where our culture is right now. Did you feel the same way, Aaron? Did it connect with you as a man?
You know, I don't have the parts to speak to what you're speaking to.
But your aspect.
I watched it as a movie. I really did. And it's super bad with women. I just felt like it's a funny comedy. And yeah, I feel like the jokes are exactly what they should be. It's very clever. It's more insightful. There's a lot more female relatability. But I don't think that should take away if you're a dude.
No, and that's kind of my thing.
Just like I don't think Superbad takes away from anybody's enjoyment if you're a woman. I mean, it's funny. It's funny no matter who is in the shoes, and it's funny.
Right.
That's what matters. What makes Amy and Molly's relationship so special?
Oh my God, everything about it is fantastic. The way they hype each other up on the regular kills me because they're like, I'm blind. I can't. You're so beautiful. I can't even look at you right now. And they just go back and forth and they are the best friends. One of my favorite.
See, that is the polar opposite of what guys do.
They're I know.
You're ugly. You're small penis. You're never going to make it in life.
Yeah. She's having sex with your brother. There's so many different things. Yeah.
No, but that's usually true.
Oh, great. But their relationship, their dynamic is built on boosting each other up, making them feel better about themselves and not letting themselves get below the line. There's a part where one of the female characters is feeling a little bit sullen and the other one smacks this character across the face and says, don't talk about my best friend like that. You don't get to do that. And I thought that was amazing. Like these moments are really, really critical and their relationship is just beautiful to watch. But they're also real. They feel like real people. Like they're going to have arguments. They're not going to see eye to eye. They're going to be very human in nature. And do things where they make mistakes and don't seem to understand the communication that should have been there, even though they have other great lines of communication. But they're so hysterical the way they operate together and the way they bounce off each other so fluidly. Like, I truly believe they're the best of friends.
This is Olivia Wilde's directorial debut.
Yes.
And she's really, really trying to get people to see it in theaters. Because, I mean, there's truth to this. This and Brightburn. We're going to talk about Brightburn in a minute. Those are two movies that went up against Aladdin and came out. I mean, they were all swinging, but
they fell hard.
They fell pretty hard. Yeah, they didn't do very well. They did under $10 million apiece, while Aladdin, you know, did 10 times that, but also has Will Smith. And it's a Disney property that everybody knows. I mean, it's not a fair fight, really.
But for Memorial Day weekend, that's still pretty low numbers,
yeah,
too.
It is pretty low numbers. Why do you think... I don't know what I want to say here, but I do kind of want to stress that we're constantly on this show, in fan circles and everywhere else, people are bitching and moaning. They want more original content in theaters. We get plenty of it on TV. But we're always bitching. We want that in theaters. And then people don't go see it when it comes out. Why should people go see Booksmart? You know, first, if $10 full price of admission, what would you give it? And then why should people go to a theater and see it versus wait for it to come home?
Well, when I first reviewed this back in March, I gave it $8. I've since seen it again, and I would still give it $8, which says a lot because I'm not normally a rewatch kind of girl. And if I do, it doesn't always hold up the same for me. Very rarely does it boost it up higher, keep it the same. But I liked it just as much this time. I laughed at all of the same jokes, even though I knew they were coming. But laughing, comedies in general, I think they do a lot better when you're in an audience with other people who are having the same enjoyment with you, that are having the same reactions to things with you. This feels like a movie that you should grab your friends, go to the theater, sit down with a bucket of popcorn, and just laugh as a group. Like, I feel like once you're around people and they're laughing, their laughter makes you laugh a little bit more, and it just makes the entire experience more enjoyable. And it's the same feeling that you're going to get when you go see a big blockbuster movie, like you see Star Wars opening night. you don't usually go see that solo. You're probably going to see that with a group of friends because you
yeah,
like
nobody went and saw a solo.
So dumb. I've
been waiting forever to use that.
But usually you're going to, because you like to have people hyping you up and on your same level of anticipation. And so when you have that same energy being thrown back at you from people around you, it makes the movie much more enjoyable. Not to say that it's not a great movie on its own, but I just feel like theater experiences elevate your pleasure of a movie.
All right. Well, that was Booksmart. And yes, I would agree. That was that's a pretty good movie. I didn't like it as much as you did, though.
What did you give your
650? It's still funny, though. It's still really, it's a comedy I think people should see in a theater because it's funny.
Billy Lord, who was also in Scream Queens, was amazing. She made me laugh constantly. There's actually a video out there, a compilation of all of her moments in this movie.
She's so funny.
Hysterical.
I would watch an entire movie of just her character.
She's so weird, and I love it so much.
All right. Well, there's another movie that came out that didn't do very well.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, it's easier to laugh in a theater full of people if there are people in your theater. So go see Booksmart in a theater. Next, we have Brightburn.
Yeah. So Brightburn is, I mean, what if a child from another world crash landed on Earth, but instead of becoming a hero to mankind like we're so used to right now and overwhelmed with, he proved to be something far more sinister. Let's say like a giant horror supervillain. That's what this movie is. It's directed by David Yurovsky and written by Mark and Brian Gunn. It does have James Gunn behind it as a producer. But man, you guys, John, I need to ask you, how did you feel about the concept before you even went into it of this flick where it's basically a kid supervillain? And then how did it meet with your expectations?
Oh, the concept I thought was brilliant. Why not do a story of what would happen with Superman if he went completely dark right away and started destroying the world? And I was excited. I was like, okay, there's so many ways they can take this. There's so many things they could do. I'm so thrilled. And I just want to see how they get down that road. And then I went to go see it. And unfortunately, I spent most of the time going, all right. Yeah, he would totally just like do that, and he wouldn't have that much imagination because he's 12. So I wasn't as excited during the whole experience of the movie.
Really?
Yeah, I was unfortunately I was a little disappointed in it.
See, well, I guess I can be the opposite opinion. I didn't love it, but I thought it was great. It was, to me, it was like that fan fiction fantasy we've all been wanting to live where our favorite heroes are actually what would you do if you had that power, but you're kind of an asshole? What if you got that power or those powers and you really don't like people? I mean, what if to me, I love what if scenarios like that. Like we've always, especially John, because Superman is the next Aquaman, probably one of the least exciting superheroes because he's so unbeatable. So when you go against unbeatable and they're the villain, I find that fascinating. That's kind of like, you know, what would you do against Thanos kind of thing? And that's what the movie, I really dug that and how gory it was and dark and how he uses all his powers for evil sadisticness. See, I didn't love it, but I liked that stuff a lot.
No, I like that stuff too. I just, like, unfortunately, I guess with the story we were being told, like the actual actions he was making, I was in for. What happened to one of the cops, like he just totally throws her up and down he does what the Hulk does to Loki in Avengers, only it's a human being and it is not pretty.
There's a lot of elements in the movie that I were like, oh, that's cool, or whoa, can't believe they did that. But there was so, felt like the concept was great.
You saw it too, right?
Yeah, but the execution, I felt like it faltered a little bit, especially in trying to establish the motives of this supervillain. Like how it got there that seemed really weak to me, where I was like, if you want to make him crazy because he's just like a bratty kid, then do that because of that. If you want to make it for a different element, then make it for that. But pick an area where you're going from and really hype that up. Don't derive it from multiple elements and keep it really grounded.
I can't
and
even say I know which element it 100% came from because they kind of pointed to a couple different ones.
Yeah. Well, to me, it seemed like it was coming from the spaceship. Everything was fine and hunky-dory until the spaceship kind of set him off. And it was something that was being programmed into him. Like, he was sent from another planet to basically be this overlord. And so that's the story.
Slipped a nuke in through the cat door. That's the idea. Right.
So, and that's the story that I got out of it. Now, there are parts of it that I didn't appreciate, which, like, the dialogue in the beginning is kind of clunky.
So bad.
And there were to explain why Elizabeth Banks was always on her kid's side. There was this throwaway line that kind of made me just roll my eyes, which was, you know, there was no proof of this in the story whatsoever, but she's just like, well, you know, I was the black sheep of my family, so I'm going to always be behind my kid. And then that's it. Like, they don't give us any sort of as to why it was like that or what was going on. Like, was it because she was the artist? Because I'm feeling really attacked. You know, it could have been anything, but like they didn't earn that relationship for her and the kid, with the exception of she just found a magical baby in the woods.
That part's fair. I agree, that's fair.
I do get, because the movie starts off immediately telling you that they've been trying to conceive for a long time. And so they have that problem with infertility, and now they have some sort of a child. So, like, I get that to an extent, but
they do take a lot of shortcuts, though.
Your child is legitimately insane, and everyone around you is telling you he's insane. You're witnessing his insaneness, and you're just like, it's cool, guys. He's fine.
I'll talk him down.
I don't think he was insane at any given moment of the story. He just acted out occasionally. And he acted out in what would normally be like a way for a 12-year-old boy to act out, especially even him, who is a borderline good kid, apparently, from the before. Here, this is funny, because like, I'm defending the story from Amanda at the moment. However, I'm not really that thrilled with it.
Dude, he stands in somebody's house, like, super creepy, like a pervert. Like, he was insane.
Yeah, his dad gave him permission to do that without even knowing he gave him permission to do that. Because that's a 12-year-old boy thing. Like, you know, I got the ability to do some magical stuff, and my dad just said that I should just go ahead and let my urges out. Okay, I'm going to go to see how this works.
Yeah, Dad made a big call on that one. Anyway, I don't want to get too...
I feel like we've already gotten a little spoilery.
I don't know if we've gotten too spoilery, but... We don't know. We're not telling you what happens in the final act. I mean, this is all stuff for the trailer. You learn he's a bad Superman. I mean, there you go.
Right.
It's just my biggest problem with the movie is how his switch is too quick. It's too convoluted. It's not really explained very well. Mm-hmm. And it's more like just a switch flipped. Now, if that's the intention, then it wasn't explained very well. I mean, right. they gave allusions to what the reasons were, but I don't think they did a very good job of explaining it to the audience. That's what I would say.
I can agree with that. Now, I'm not going to say anything about the ending, but I am curious. Do you guys want more of these types of movies or more from this world? Do you feel like you got enough out of this where you're like, they can make some improvements and I would really like to be part, have more of these stories told?
They're going to have to do a lot of work to earn me back after this one. So the idea of what we got, it's not enough for make me want to continue watching more. I don't know if I want to see the other versions of this story at all.
God, you're so drunk. Yeah, I definitely want to see more. I want to see Dark Aquaman. I want to see Dark Wonder Woman. I want to see Dark Green Lantern, Dark Hulk. I don't care. Just evil them up. I want evil. I want an evil super team, the Dark Avengers. I want basically the horror version of the Justice League. That's what I want. Yes. I want more. I love the idea. I love the concept. Give me something that's kind of not what we're used to.
I can agree with that. And I'm cool with having more of these darker stories told where we're getting horror superheroes. But
they're not superheroes.
Supervillains.
Supervillains. Yeah.
Supervillains. But I do not, and I was worried about this going into the movie, I do not trust David Yurovsky, however you say his name.
I don't think it was directed stunningly.
No, he did The Hive, and that was also kind of an atrocity. And so I was worried going into this after seeing that movie. And I don't think I want to trust his take on any more of these types of movies.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my point. My point is that not that the idea was a bad idea. My point is that if it's executed like this, then I don't care.
Right.
The biggest problem is they took too many shortcuts to get to plot points. Like, things just happen, and then nobody bothers mentioning that the consequences of what just happened, or they just skip over it, or they just pretend like, ah, it's no big deal.
Because the movie was all about, like, let's show something really crazy and cool and grotesque, and it's like, these are really cool moments,
which
but
I'm
how
for.
Did we get here? Like, what? There's no actual motives for this to happen, and then, like you said, there's no follow-up on any consequences to what they just did for this plot point, and it's like,
yeah, there's a couple.
So messy the
moment,
sometimes.
There's a moment, I can't spoil it, because it will be a huge spoiler, but between the dad and the son in the woods and what happens there, I'm like, that, why did you even bother with that? Why did you do that?
That whole scene, yeah.
Why did you do that? Because it doesn't make any sense for him to do that, what he did. It just feels like a big stretch for me.
That wraps up Brightburn. I want to know what you guys thought as a score. So if the full price of admission were $10, what would you give it, John?
I'm giving it $5 just strictly off the power of Elizabeth Banks acting in this, mm-hmm. because if anything, she did a stellar job.
Aaron?
I give it $6.50. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it had some story problems, but several, but I really enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. It's the kind of movie I want to see in a theater sometimes.
I'd give it $5, straight down the middle average.
Guess I'm in the minority, but I like stuff. Haters.
I liked
haters.
There were some really cool pieces in it, but it was just
maybe
poorly
we should
executed.
Add a feminist Superman. How about that?
Well, I mean, you could,
I'm
but
just
like...
kidding. Don't write a letter. God, don't write a letter. She knows I'm kidding.
No one reads.
All right, let's move to Aladdin.
All right, so Aaron saw Aladdin, and let's get some of the, you know, bona fides under their control here. A kind-hearted street urchin and a power-hungry grand vizier vie for the magic lamp that has the power to make the deepest wishes come true. This is actually directed by Guy Ritchie, which when I didn't actually realize that until, like, today. I was today right. Days old.
Manna didn't either. I saw it with her, and she was like, Guy Ritchie directed this?
I, like, tapped him on the shoulder, and I was like, wait. And he looks at me like, why the hell are you talking? Like, the movie's just about to start. Yeah. And I was like, I didn't know Guy Ritchie directed this. What? And he just looks at me like,
shut up. That's really how I was looking at you.
Shut up, and also, you should know this.
Right. Yeah, I was, like, there was so much talk about Will Smith and his blue mm-hmm. nipples yeah. and all these other things. Like, I was... Like, I completely wiped my brain that Guy Ritchie directed this. But speaking of Will Smith plays a genie, Mena Massoud plays Aladdin, and Naomi Scott plays Jasmine. All right, so this is a remake of a Disney cartoon. We all know this. We all know what's going on. Is this a Disney cash grab, or is this an actual inspired execution, Aaron?
Okay, so I'm gonna set the mood. I didn't want to see this at all. I didn't. And it wasn't because of the blue nipples, because I go find all my tweets and Facebook comments. I've always backed Will Smith, even when the crazy blue thing came out, because it's Will Smith, man. I have zero doubts about Will Smith. None. It's not a story I want to see retold. And I'm kind of tired of the whole Disney live action remake thing. So I didn't want to see it, but it's my wife's favorite princess because it's the only princess and it's only a Disney princess that looks like her. That's how she feels about it. So... we have to go see Aladdin. Oh, yay. That's how I felt walking in. From the moment the movie started, they kind of go into a dance number or musical song and dance kind of thing. And it's very choreographed. It's very staged. You know this, but it's so well done. You can't help but smile entirely. So from that moment until the last moment, all I did was smile and laugh and wish Amanda would shut up so I could watch this movie. And so, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was completely, even though it's the movie that I remember from as a kid, but see, I don't have the same problem a lot of people do, because to me, Aladdin didn't have a ton of rewatchability, because a lot of that is just rat-a-tat-tat Robin Williams jokes. And then the movie got kind of swallowed up by his personality. So to me, the movie didn't really flow as a film so much as it did. It's a Robin Williams piece. This felt more like a complete movie. And I'm not saying it's better than the original Aladdin, because the original, I mean, you got 20 years on it. I think it's a beautiful film. It has its own place in history. I just feel like this Aladdin did its own thing, made its own movie, and Will Smith 100% was respectful and remembered Robin Williams' performance. He paid homage to him, he honored him, and also made that entire role his own for this movie. So it was absolutely beautiful, well staged, well choreographed. The relationships were warm and charming. I really just loved Aladdin and Jasmine together. They were just like a sweet couple, and Will Smith was great. So I just talked a lot about, yes, I smiled from ear to ear the entirety of the movie.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Aaron. I don't have any more questions to ask you. Amanda, were you able to shut up long enough to enjoy the movie?
Yes. Short answer, yes. I was not excited to see this at all. I was with Aaron, even up to probably the last...
There's a big group of us, by the way.
Yeah, 30 minutes.
It wasn't like she was third date tagging.
Right.
Third
wheel.
Third wheel, thank you.
It was like 30 minutes tagging. Before the movie.
Third wheel tagging.
Let me... You guys stop talking.
No, he's trying to understand what I was saying, and I didn't understand what I said.
Third wheeling.
Okay, got it.
But there was like 7 of us, so there was... Yeah. Anyway... It was like 30 minutes before the movie. I still hadn't decided if I wanted to go see it because I just had zero desire based off the trailer. Even though I've always loved the story, I liked the original. And I'm really happy that I ended up going to see it because it blew me away. I was entirely enthralled with it the entire way through. The moments with Aladdin and Jasmine obviously stole the screen for me. I still really liked Will Smith. But Naomi Scott, like... Wow. As soon as she started singing and she barely even got into it, this is a moment where I started talking again to Aaron. I was like, oh my God, her voice is so beautiful.
Yeah, while she's singing, John.
It was like 2 seconds into her singing. It wasn't that serious. Normally, I'm not this much of a talker, but...
What's that?
That doesn't sound frustrating at all.
No, it's not.
Well, I mean, basically, I really liked the movie and I thought that the leads were incredible. I liked the way the story was told. There wasn't much in the film that I felt... needed to be taken out. It felt like a good length of time, even though it was a little over 2 hours. And sometimes I'm a little weird about that nowadays because I'm like 2 hours and 8 minutes plus 20 minutes of previews. Ugh. But it was great. I loved it. And I loved the music. I mean, it's all very similar and stuff.
How'd you feel about the songs in terms of did you see the original?
Yeah.
Cartoon. It's a lot of them are the same songs. They've just been revamped or
they're modernized.
Mm-hmm. Will Smith puts his own spin on every single one of them. What did you think about? And they had one new one.
They had a new one for Jasmine.
Yeah. So what did you think about the actual songs?
Oh my gosh, I seriously cried when she did Speechless. I thought it was
that's a really
amazing.
Beautiful song, a very powerful ballad.
Her performance with singing it blew me away. Like I couldn't, because I've seen a couple of posts about like, oh, Jasmine has her own song, and I was like, oh my gosh, no way, that's crazy. Well, this will be fun. Did not expect it to live up to the hype of what I'd seen. But seriously, this woman, like her pipes are legit. And the way she carries herself, the way she doesn't feel like she's like a stage performer. She feels like she's a legitimate actress singing the song, and like she truly believes what she's singing. Like she feels
she puts
it.
Emotion in
you
it.
Can yeah, you can see it on her face and her entire body language. Like I believe this is exactly what she's feeling in this moment. And I feel like those types of performances, even though the music is great, totally outweigh whatever song they're even singing. Like I was just amazed by it. But the music was great, and I do like the different rap spins basically Will Smith put on his. You know, it felt like that's what you were talking about, where he made the role his own. Those sorts of things where I was like, this is Will Smith. Like, Will Smith is putting himself for sure into this role in this moment. Like, I can see it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was so excited because I see what I miss. John, it's like you're not even here.
Yeah, I know.
what I really miss about Will Smith's performances, he hasn't done a song for a movie in a long time. You know, he used to do that for every movie he had. You know, Men in Black, Wild Wild West, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider.
Oh my God, they had like a Wild Wild West moment for him too.
They had all kinds of stuff. And it's it felt like a callback to what he was so good at for so long. And he kind of stepped away because I want to be a serious actor. Mm-hmm. And he's really struggled to try to get back to the fun-loving Will Smith that he always was. This feels like a throwback to what he does best when he allows himself to be that guy instead of trying so hard to be different guys, I guess.
Yeah.
And I loved it so much.
It was
I was
so, good.
So surprised how much I enjoyed the movie.
All right. So I have very little questions left for either one of you because the two of you just kept on talking and got rid of all my questions in the process.
That's how you
So I just came up with the one that I think is very important. Desert Island movie, Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin?
Live action or?
Live action.
Oh, wow. Because I love both of them now. Oh, man.
That's easy. Aladdin.
Yeah. Okay. I think there's some really good. I still listen to the soundtrack of Beauty and the Beast. I'm going to have to go as a movie. The movie as a whole, I'm going to have to go with Aladdin.
Okay, because I don't know if you guys remembered, but we weren't exactly effusive about Beauty and the Beast.
Well, you weren't.
I liked Beauty and the Beast. I loved it. I gave it 7.5. I don't know who you are. So you were the meh, Beauty and the meh. Maybe you don't like movies.
True. Anywho, all right, what's your score, Amanda, on Aladdin?
Ooh, me first. I'm going to give this bad boy 850.
I am also going 850, and I also listened to the soundtrack immediately when I got home.
Me too!
Which I think is, you probably sang it during the movie, because you just can't stop talking.
I did, but also it was played in the car when I was in the parking lot.
It was very fun, very fun. So 850 right, across the board. Cool.
I am disappointed that I didn't go see it.
You should be.
I'm disappointed in you for various reasons. That's just one that I threw in the mix.
I've always told you guys to stop having, like, I don't know.
Any
expectations, feelings, emotions. We got it. All right. So new release is coming out. We're just going to zip right through this. May 31st, Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Woohoo! Godzilla!
Oh, my goodness. That happened.
Someone just died on the freeway. Rocket Man and Ma. Which Ma looks really good. I just feel like it's a really bad date.
That trailer gives the entire movie away.
It does, but it looks good. But I just feel like there's too many other movies people aren't going to go see Ma. But it looks really good. Good Omens hits Amazon Prime, which is a TV series. Oh my God, it looks so good. And this is also May 31st. And When They See Us, based on the Central Park 5, hits Netflix. So there is so much to watch May 31st. You're going to be busy all weekend, man. Don't bother going outside. Who cares about the sun? It's crazy.
And there's Godzilla.
Yes. We'll talk a lot about Godzilla next week, John.
I can talk about him now.
Do you know he shoots light lasers out of his mouth?
It's not lasers. It's atomic breath.
Oh, corrected.
Here's my theory. I haven't seen this, but in the trailer, you have Millie Bobby Brown, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking she might be the normal representation of, you watch the old Godzilla movies, right? Because you love this.
Yeah.
Okay. Of those little.
What kind of question is that, you monster?
Of those little ladies that they kept in their hands. Remember that?
I said that.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Well,
he just stole your opinion.
I was totally did not hear you say that to me. I don't recall that, but
I said that, and I said that I haven't looked it up, but I'm pretty sure that Charles Dance's character is old version Tom Hiddleston from his character from Kong Island.
I remember that, but I don't know.
And I also said Millie Bobby Brown is going to be the one who can talk to the monsters. Specifically, she's going to be talking to Mothra.
I don't think
there's... Oh, wow. He even named which monster. He's so got you.
From the outside in topic, fan outrage versus entitlement. When does it become entitlement? So I've got some things I'm going to run by you guys before we start this discussion, because the discussion is actually pretty simple, but it'll probably be lengthy, knowing us and Amanda. Here are just a few of the things fans have expressed outrage about recently. Star Wars The Last Jedi was apparently so horrendous that fans petitioned for a remake. Fans petitioned to rehire James Gunn for Guardians 3 after Disney dumped him over Twitter issues, which Disney did in that respect. Sonic the Hedgehog had teeth that terrified people, and filmmakers took it to heart by pushing that film back to February 2020 so that they can refine the character.
Redo his face.
Yeah, completely
redo. Which didn't really need redoing. His face was kind of terrible.
I understand that, but yeah, we'll get there. Once again, fans petitioned for a new Batman after Robert Pattinson was announced as cast in the role, which none of those fans have even seen Good Time, so I can't even speak to them. Fans that didn't care for the final season of Game of Thrones famously petitioned for a remake of the season to the tune of 1.5 million plus signatures and counting. Oh, and to connect it all, they also demanded that Thrones creators David Benioff and D.B. Weiss be banned from the Star Wars films they were planning on taking on. Really? And don't even get me started on the internet's response to Brie Larson as Captain Marvel and how loud that drum was being beaten to death. Now, before we get into the topic, I want to mention a couple articles that speak to entitlement and fan outrage. AV Club noted, fan service has gotten almost too good of a rap as it has worked its way into mainstream film, often with considerable skill, which seems like a nice thing. Birth Movies Death critiqued, these fans are treating stories like ordering a rest at a restaurant. Hold the pickles, please, and can I substitute kale for the lettuce? But that isn't how art works, and it shouldn't be how art lovers react to art. And then George R.R. Martin famously said, art is not a democracy. Therefore, we're not focusing on just outrageous week, because, I mean, we would be here for hours. these days, it does feel a lot more toxic than not, but a lot of good can come from outrage, and I think it has been good in many respects when it's used responsibly. What we're discussing is this concept of starting petitions to try and reshape art. You do not get to choose the outcome of art, no matter how much you love it. Outrage and petitions can occasionally be a good way to get attention from filmmakers to alert them about a weak product, sure. But when does this organized outrage simply turn into entitlement? And now we can discuss.
It turns into entitlement for me when you remove that it's an opinion of yours and that you know, maybe this would have been done better if it had been done this way, or, you know, I really would have liked this to be done differently, et cetera, et cetera. It's when you turn it into, this is how it needs to be. I say it needs to be this way, so let's start a petition and it's going to be this way. To me, I think you do have a right to critique. You have a right to have an opinion on this piece of art. You have a right to expect more if you feel like filmmakers aren't really giving it their all. You have a right to voice your opinion in every respect. And this is something that listener Jessica Farrell had said in Facebook, where she was talking about that basically fans have a right to be vocal about it, even if they're using like salty memes and reviews and forums, so long as the criticism engages with the art or creation of the art and would itself be defensible and open to criticism, which would make it legit.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem of this is when you remove any potential for there to be a discussion, when you remove the subjectivity of art, that's a problem. Because if you're saying this is the way it needs to be, you're not a creator, you weren't in the room, you don't necessarily have a right to expect that the art changes. You have every right in the world to critique what you get back from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe you have any right to demand that things be changed, be different for the art itself. Now, I feel like James Gunn, that situation is a little bit different because it's not anything about what was produced. It's not about art. It's just who do we want taking on the art? That I feel like is a little bit of a different conversation
I would agree
piece.
With that. Yeah.
But when we're talking about, like, even when it comes to the Sonic character, like, I think we can all agree it did look a little creepy with teeth. But the actual outrage, people being so mad about it. Like, first of all, do you not have anything better to do with your life?
No.
Then go to change.org?
The answer is no.
Yeah, look, the short version of what you're saying is as soon as, like, the problem starts becoming, this is the hill I'm going to die on right here. That's when we've reached our limit. Like, and that's where I start having an issue with it too. When you can't get some morons to sit there and act on any other actual real issue that needs to act, but Sonic's got teeth. This is bullshit. We're going to fix it right now.
Were you bothered by Sonic, Mana?
I mean, I thought it didn't look the best, because I've actually been pretty excited about Sonic as a movie because I've always liked the games, but it's...
I don't know if I can take your opinion seriously anymore.
Right.
Part of the problem is that it didn't look like Sonic, with the exception of it was blue, it had spikes, and all these other things. That was the bigger part of the problem, is like the character didn't have the actual look of the character, and they were trying to anthropomorphize him too much. And they should have stuck more to the roots of what the character looked like, and that's where we get to the issue. And I'm behind people saying, you know what, maybe the filmmakers need to understand that we're not happy with this before it comes out, because somebody clearly made a mistake, they weren't paying attention, and they should have been really working at what the character looked like. But the flip side of it, like I said before, when it crosses the line into, you know what, these guys should never work on this property because I didn't like how they wrapped up a property that I actually really love, but because I didn't like the story did not tell me the story that I had set up in my mind, and I end up being wrong in my Game of Thrones pool, those guys don't have a right to do Star Wars anymore.
Another thing to keep in mind is that there is benefit to fans voicing their opinion with some sort of critique and not being aggressive about it, but just saying, like, this looks a little off to me. Because then we have filmmakers who, and I know there's some people who are really angry about Sonic, the filmmakers changing it, because they're like, oh, well, they're just appeasing fan audiences and they shouldn't have to change their art.
They can't win.
But I'm like, at the same time, isn't that exactly what we want? If it's a property that's comparable, like it's an existing property, and you're saying this does not represent the property that it's derived from, there should be some improvement here. here's our thoughts on it. And then the filmmakers are like, I'm going to listen to the people who are going to pay me money for this film. They may have like a legitimate basis for their critique. Let's take that into consideration and let's do something about it. That is huge for a filmmaker to do. I mean, that's them. Imagine somebody was like, we need to have that sort of respectful criticism of any sort of thing for anything to get better. You can never improve if there's never any critique. It just shouldn't be like, this is the way it has to be.
My only problem with the whole Sonic issue is, and where Borders, in, not Borders, where it jumps into entitlement, is that, yeah, there's genuine criticism to be had there, and there's genuine problems with that creepy-ass hedgehog. I mean, yeah, it looked creepy, and I don't even want to see this movie, but I saw the trailer and went, ah, Jesus. what is that? So, in my mind, I think the director totally already knew this, and he was just probably happy that someone pointed it out and the internet pointed it out and gave them the motivation to say, maybe we hold off for a few more months and we get this right so we don't screw it up. Okay. My only problem with them doing it the way that they did it, which is basically after all the screaming and yelling and the internet went crazy, is that it just fuels the people that react that way. Mm-hmm. And so to me, even here, look, it's your art. I don't think any amount of outrage should make you change anything. If your vision mm-hmm. is whatever your vision is, then that should be your vision. And you live or die by that sword. If you feel like it's not the right vision, and sometimes you need a little internet push to get the producers to get on board with that, maybe that's the case. But when you have all this outrage and all these people screaming and yelling, and then you change it, all you're doing is you're adding a layer of voice and validity to the people that are irrational about it. Not people that have legitimate criticism. I'm talking about irrational. And that's where entitlement is a problem, because those voices, and it's always a minority, those voices continue to get louder every time someone listens to them and does whatever they want them to do. And that concerns me, because it just feels like, here, somebody, Ty Nelson. I guess I first noticed in the late 90s when the Star Wars special editions and the Han shot first went from griping to outrage. It's fine if you don't like it and say it so, but when people don't let it go and start demanding it be changed back, that's entitlement. Bottom line is, nothing truly belongs to the fans, and how would that work if it did? The only choice fans can make is whether or not to engage with the property. That's it. And if something doesn't make you happy or you're not getting an enjoyment out of it, then you shouldn't watch it. And I agree with that. I feel like we've gotten to a point where fandom, and it's not all fandom. We all have our nice little, you know, Hollywood Outsider, we have a nice little circle of, you know, 1,000 or so people that communicate in that Facebook group. It's great because people are very respectful. They're very kind. You know, it's very not toxic.
It's not trolling.
But then you leave that nice safe space and you go to the rest of the internet, and God forbid you go to Reddit or Twitter. And it's just like everything is toxic, and everybody just automatically, no matter what you do, they don't like it. Game of Thrones, I don't care if you ended it perfectly. There'd be people that are screaming about the ending. And Last Jedi, I still to this day can't understand why you're so mad about this. Like, why a petition? Why is Rian Johnson being targeted on the internet because he directed this movie and they didn't like it? Just say, you know what? Nothing in that movie is worse than anything in the prequels. Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, that's very true. Why attack an actress for being who she is?
You mean talking about Brie Larson?
No, I was talking about the actress who played Rose.
Yeah, Kelly Tran?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why attack her for playing? She was offered a role and she got the role and she played it to the best of her ability. But because people didn't like the character, they attacked the actress. And it's just that's silly.
Fans drove her and Daisy Ridley both off the internet, which, hey, I'm not big on, you know, hey, you communicate with celebrities and everything. I mean, I don't get into that whole thing, but come on, man. I mean, there's still people, and that's just insane.
I think that this next thing I'm going to tell you about really speaks to how much celebrities understand that fan outrage is a real problem and that they just don't want to have a part in it. With Veronica Mars coming up for the revival through Hulu.
This is for you to plug your podcast.
No, Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell, although it is Veronica's Marshmallows, if you want to check it out.
Well done. There you go.
She said already in an interview that she's going to stay off of the internet when it premieres because she's not sure how fans are going to react. There's going to be a lot of controversy about it. And I'm like, and I've seen how some of the people react to potential changes in the show structure, in storylines. And even that, I'm like, wow, you guys are taking this way too seriously. But for the fact that an actress, a well-established actress who's in a lot of different properties, is like, my new show is coming out, I need to leave the internet because it's going to be too much for me to handle. Like, that's a problem. That is not okay that we have to, like, push actresses and actors and directors and all of these creative minds out of interacting with us, which is what we want. They want to interact with us. We've finally got to a place where we can easily access these people that have made change in our life, that have impacted us in some way because of what they've created, what they've done. And now we're pushing them away because we want to get mad about every single thing that we see, to the point where they're like, I'm not even going to participate in this. That's a problem. That's not okay.
Well, and the part of a bigger, that's a very big part. I see that with the Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld. Huh? So
you had to look at those plugs.
That's cute.
Both in terms of the content as well as the respective show. Because fans get mad when their theories, both of those shows are very focused on fan theories and where it's going and everything else. And if things don't come to fruition, they shout to the heavens. They're all over the internet screaming and yelling until someone acknowledges them. And if I disagree with anything they say, I'm getting shouted.
They hate him.
Yes.
They hate him.
Yeah. Some of them. Yeah.
Some of them love him. Yeah. But the ones who have an opposite theory from him, where he's like, it's literally been disproven on the show, please leave it alone. He's
they're very, very angry with me about this.
Yeah.
And so I've seen it firsthand in both respects. And the problem, the big problem with outrage today and how it leads to entitlement is that there are some serious issues of validity to some of the outrage. Like the things that should matter aren't getting the attention, and the things that don't matter are getting all the attention. Come on. Come on. Because media is going to jump on whatever they can get clicks on, and they love to just stir the pot. I mean, everything is so-and-so slams this. So-and-so, you know, hates this. So-and-so, I mean, it's never positive. It's not like, you know, Steven Spielberg said he loved watching the new Star Wars movie. You know, they don't have positive stuff. It's all like, let's find what's negative because that's what people are going to click on because they love to get
like
riled
up. Like the Tarantino article.
Oh, Tarantino, man. It's just
slash him. It's like, he was the most polite human, where he was just like, I disagree with your opinion. And they were like,
I reject your hypothesis
is what he said or whatever. But it's like, dude, that's not, like, they put out some really horrendous article making it sound like
fueling people.
Yeah,
and their anger, and their ire.
Dude, that's also part of the problem.
But when you start petitions and then you demand that changes are being made, because this goes to the Blacklist. We just had a major theory, in my opinion, was disproven. And there were people that wanted to start a petition to actually make it eligible again, or make it, I guess, legitimate. I mean, just to remove basically a piece
possible.
Yeah. To basically clarify some of the lore. Or say something a little different, like tweak the lore so that their theory still holds. Like, that doesn't make it. That's not, you're trying to infuse your vision on art. It's not your vision. Go make your own show. Go make your own movie. Go make your own book. Go make your own painting, whatever.
Stuart Bannerman, which, come on, that's an awesome name, Stuart.
I dig that. Bannerman. I like it.
You know, he said fans are entitled to dislike or like, but they're not entitled over the films or shows cast. They can't, like, write over what they're saying. I'm all for debate, but when it turns nasty or personal, it's just stupid and horrible. And I agree with what he's saying there. When it comes to something, and as somebody who produces art that put it out there on the internet, the second somebody tries to tell me what they think I should have done because it... that's what my intent was in the beginning. The fact that somebody was trying to explain to me what my intent is makes them ridiculous. It makes them wrong the second it comes out of their mouth.
Because people don't know your intent. You're an artist. People don't know your intent. You can't know someone else's intent. And you may have an idea of what the vision is. And you know, a lot of this is people are taking ownership and they're passionate, which, you know, I don't want to paint this all as a negative though, because I think it's wonderful that fans are passionate and that they love something so much that they're going to go on the internet and they're going to voice their criticism. And I don't agree with the world where we ban people that love everything or hate everything. If you like, love, hate, whatever you are to a property, that's your right, by God. And you should have absolute right to that opinion. It's when you demand that it gets changed or that it's different. That's when the entitlement stuff happens and it becomes a serious problem for fandom as a whole, not just for the internet or those creators, but for fandom. It hurts fandom.
Well, it really does, because it actually puts, like, let's say the Game of Thrones, for example. There are people out there in the world who haven't seen Game of Thrones, and they've been putting it on hold or pausing it or not, you know, not jumping on the bandwagon and waiting for it to end for a specific reason. Whatever that reason is, a lot of times they're like, okay, well, great. Now that it's all out and I can watch it in all one lump sum, as I like to watch stuff now, I'm going to watch it. But now there's all of this focus on the negative and the focus on how people want it changed and all this other stuff. What's that person going to do now? That person's going to be like, maybe I shouldn't bother.
Well, and to Jessica's point, a listener again who follow up on some of the stuff she wrote a pretty lengthy comment, but she was talking about how blurring the line is social critique, which is kind of what Aaron was talking about. And she says, I think this type of thing will be very personal to groups of individuals. If, for example, a group of fans are pissed about Ghostbusters being ladies, I think those people are probably toxic butthurt whiners, and no one wants to hear from the entitled brats. On the flip side, a whitewashed character is pretty offensive to me, and I personally would support whoever is speaking up about it, preferably in salty memes, though someone would definitely call me an entitled brat for my opinion. I don't know what you can do here. If we don't talk about these issues, there will be no change, and there will always be people who oppose that change or prefer the status quo. Who will be right in the end? Who is the entitled one?
That's a really interesting way to look at it.
Uh-huh. I liked it.
You think you're right, but maybe the other person is right too, in their own way.
Everybody has their own vision. I don't think that we should be able to say, like, no, you're wrong about your opinion here, about what you're critiquing and why you see it that way, because that's the way you see it, which is why, in some respect, like, you can have that perspective, but you can't require or demand that the filmmaker change their vision to meet yours. And that's the problem. That's where the entitlement kind of, cross that bridge.
And I also feel like entitlement happens before you see the product. To me,
oh, yes, 100%.
So, see, like, she brought up Ghostbusters, and that's a prime example. Because if you saw the movie and you didn't like it because those four particular women were not funny together, okay, legitimate critique. Yeah, it's not my opinion. I don't agree with it. But it's a legitimate critique, and you're entitled to it. But people that complain about it before they see the product,
just because it was a bunch of ladies,
that's entitlement. That's I want when I want it, and it's my thing. Well, how do you not know that that vision isn't going to be good or better? You don't know. You just assume so. And honestly, I feel like when it happens, especially when a movie is in production or it's in pre-production or it's just getting going, that can affect the outcome, because you have people that are now leery about everything on the internet. Kit Harington is famous for the for going on record. I know it's a sad time to mention this because of his troubles in the press, but he has gone on record as being incredibly overwhelmed with the stress of pressure for performing on the show, for being a lead, especially because people were just constantly pounding on his acting, just pouncing on this guy. So it can affect the product too. And I don't think that's fair. Let the vision speak. Let the actors do their job. And then whatever the end product is, that's what people should be complaining about. That's what they should be having an opinion or a critique about. You should never want it changed. Like, that's the same thing with the casting. You know, they thought Affleck was going to be a horrible Batman. Ha! Turns out Martha was the problem. You didn't see that coming. And then, you know, you've got Robert Pattinson. He can't act. Because why? Because he was in Twilight. Have you seen anything else this guy's done? Really? To shout him off that
Heath
mountain?
Heath Ledger, remember when he was cast? Man.
And people will say, no, I always knew Heath Ledger. No, you didn't. Nope. Nobody thought that was... I didn't think it was a good casting either. I thought it was ridiculous. So, you don't know until you see it. Until you see it,
well,
you don't
know. Also, these are human beings. Like, I mean, to get very, I don't know, sappy here, these are still actual people with actual feelings that have put all of their effort, their time, probably their money, their entire life into making this piece of work for the public consumption. But it's something that they're passionate about, that they love, that they've just expended their entire being into. And you're going to shit on everything about it before you've even seen it a lot of times, just because of your own feelings. And then you're going to be vicious and, like, attack
mean,
them.
Mean. It's just bullying. In some
it
respects,
is bullying.
That aspect can be bullying. And
it is.
The fact that they have millions is not an excuse. I don't care how much money you have. It's never okay to do that.
Right. There's still people. Like, anyway.
I found this bit from Kate Gardner from the Mary Sue, she wrote an article last year on this issue in fandom. And she said, fandom has always been a little about taking part and creating something to do out of your favorite text. But there's a difference between crafting the perfect fan fiction and insisting your fan fiction becomes what happens on the big screen. The internet has blurred the line between creators and fans to a new degree, offering a sense of intimacy due to Twitter presences and the ability to retweet and like what fans have said or created. However, that does not mean the creators are now beholden to do exactly what fans tweeted them to do. Fandom is a transformative space. It's where you go to interact with the media you love on a more intense degree than you do while simply watching a film or show or reading a book. There, you take it and make it your own to a degree. But it doesn't mean that you get to change the product.
I like that.
I like that too. I had a group of friends in which I spent a lot of time with, and when they didn't like something, they would always say they would just hammer you with how much you liked it by just being like, yeah, but it's gay. And that would be the end of the discussion. Oh man, that movie was so much fun. It's gay. Okay, can you elaborate? No, it's gay. And that was my life through most of the aughts when it came to things. And my last interactions when it came to a movie with a friend of mine was Captain America, the First Avenger. We went and saw it. It was one of the last times I went and saw a movie with him. And we come out and I'm just like floored by how amazing the movie was. And he was just kind of meh about it. And I was like, how did you not enjoy that? He's like, all he ever really used was either that pistol or maybe a Thompson submachine gun. I wanted to see him walk around with a chain gun or something and start just blasting people. And to that fact, I went, do you even know who Captain America is? Yeah, he's supposed to be a guy who can carry a chain gun and blast people. So your answer is no, you don't. No, he needs to carry a chain gun. Everything else is gay. Okay, that's it. And that's like, I find that the fact that you couldn't even have a discussion about the whole process without even being like, yeah, but your problem isn't like you wanted to see Captain America. Your problem is you wanted to see some guy, chain gun wielding psychotic carry a gun, and you're upset because the movie wasn't that.
And also, I want to hear him say that today, like in a theater in a group of people, and see how that fares.
That would not go well.
When it comes to what you're talking about, I think that's the biggest issue in the world right now, is that what we expect, what we want, right?
Expectations lead to disappointment.
Always, man. Almost always. Every once in a while, you can be pleasantly surprised. But when was the last time you expected some huge thing and they surpassed it? It doesn't happen very often. If you set your sights too high, I mean, there's just nowhere to go but down. You start on top of Mount Everest, you can't go much higher unless you learn how to fly.
I get, for me personally, I get excited about things, but I don't try to put my own story on it, especially if I haven't seen it yet.
Are you sure you do? Because we're debating that like every week. Are you sure you get excited about anything, John?
It's Godzilla week. He's excited now.
Yeah, I'm totally excited. However, I get excited. I get excited about things, and I'm always tempering my excitement. I'm always managing it to the point where it is something that it's not leading me, whereas it's something that's energizing me, if that makes any sense.
It does. Any final words on fandom versus entitlement? Outrage versus entitlement? Okay. We're going to close this show up. We meant to do it short. We didn't do that. Well, that's a big surprise. All right. Any recent streaming or TV recommendations not previously talked about, Amanda?
I've been catching up on Lucifer. And if you haven't watched that show yet, I do really like it. I had only seen a few episodes, but now I'm kind of binging it.
I love that dude.
Yeah. Been watching a lot of Guy Ritchie movies lately. And Dead to Me, I watched a second round.
So you did like, I recommended that one to you.
What? Dead to Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I told you I liked it. I loved it the first time I watched it, and I watched it all over again this weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good show. Why were you rewatching Guy Ritchie before Aladdin?
No. Yes, but I didn't know that Guy Ritchie was doing Aladdin. It was just like that was the movie that we happened to be, or the
go watch his old movies.
Oh, I have been.
Do not understand how he got Aladdin.
That's why when I turned to you, I'm like, I've been watching a lot of Guy Ritchie movies lately. Like, how is he going to pull this off?
Because when is Aladdin going to shoot him in the face and then call him things he can't say here?
Because there's two Jason Statham movies. I don't remember the names of them.
Revolver.
Sure.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Yeah.
Yep. That's the one that I watched just before I saw Aladdin. I was like, how is this going
to
work?
Do you have to put closed captioning on to watch them? I used to have to.
I mean, I usually watch everything with close
because
captioning.
Because that's just the way he's talking. It's really a Cockney accent. And it's really so hard. Yeah, it's hard to understand what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the more you watch those movies, the more I couldn't understand Brad Pitt in the movie.
Oh my God, that one was so...
Snatch?
In Snatch, I couldn't understand a single word. But now that I've watched the movie like 5 or 6 times, I understand everything he is saying.
It's so ridiculous. He speaks like accent. You do.
Well, maybe. But there's another one that they did. I believe they did Revolver with Jason Statham, and that's actually a fantastic movie.
Yeah, that is a really good one.
I don't remember the names of the ones that I've watched, but I've watched a lot of them.
I don't know, talk like this, but a lot to the whole movie.
Yeah, then I've seen that one.
Hello,
Michael Caine's going to come in here and whoop your ass.
All right, what about you, John? Anything you've been watching recently you want to recommend? God, I'm having a hard time talking.
I just got caught up on the most recent season of Supernatural because it's on Netflix right now. And I can see why they're ready to call it quits. Like, not that there's anything wrong with the season because it's still a lot of fun and it's still a great show. But it relies very heavily on your feelings for the two main characters and not so heavily on story. And those guys got to be tired.
I know I'm tired. You mentioned Supernatural like every week. And then every week you're like, oh, I'm going to say this like I've never mentioned it before. But Supernatural.
But then I get banned from saying things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, but I only watched the show this week for the first time.
Fair enough.
In like since the last time it came out on Netflix.
All right. Well, I watched Guava Island. I actually watched it a couple weeks ago, but I keep meaning to mention it and I forgot. But it stars Donald Glover and Rihanna. It's on Amazon Prime. It's an hour-long movie about a musician trying to kind of bring back the spirit to his island through music and the corporate lord on the island trying to stop him. It's a very short, very breezy film, but I enjoyed it. And I think if you're a Childish Gambino fan, it's basically a music video. So check that out. And then, I'm so excited. I got the best surprise ever because I am not on Twitter every 5 minutes, so I had no idea this was coming out. Slasher Season 3 hit Netflix on May 23rd, and I love this show. Season 3, because every season is like a unique story, right? It's a different story. This time it revolves around a slew of religious and identity politics. Social media is a problem. Everything is kind of like worked into this story about this very sexual Kit Jennings who was knifed down in the street in front of his apartment complex. This event steamrolls into another event, and 1 year later, a killer has arrived to target the witnesses that were there that night. Dun, dun, dun. For the entirety of the season, we latch heavily on Sadia, who's a Muslim teen who takes her religion very seriously, and it actually is a very interesting, prominent story arc. It's not just used as some kind of side horror hustle where they just use it for cheap scares or something, or cheap dissection of a religion. It actually is a very important part of her story, which I really enjoyed. We also follow Angel, who's this guy who keeps falling in love with other guys that are either too busy like Kit or married to fellow tenants like Joe. The characters themselves are very interesting. The actors are extremely engaging. The set pieces are fun. The murders are so gruesome and the mystery is worth the investment. I love season 2 just a little bit more, but this was a damn good season of 8 episode television on Netflix. Slasher.
Well, thanks for your written review, spoken verbally.
I wanted to make sure I covered it. There you go. Slasher.
Seriously. Full price submission is $10.
I give it $8, probably. Mm.
I watched the first season.
Dude, the second season is so much better. Watch the second season. Yes.
I watched the first. I did enjoy it. It's just, it didn't like push me to go watch more. And then when you're like, well, the second season has nothing to do with the first season. And I just love the actress in the first season. Like, you know, she's just a lot of fun to look at.
So simple.
I am simple, but the fact that she wasn't in the second season, I'm like, okay, well, now I got to get to know all new people. How am I going to do this? This is stupid.
It's good, though. Check it out. And the third season.
I watched the first few seasons of Lucifer, too. So Lucifer was something that was really great and something it just fell off the face of the earth for me.
It's 8 episodes. You got time. All right, next week, our topic is going to be what makes a great monster movie. And then we're just going to let John talk for like 30 minutes or so, and we'll do Godzilla spoiler cast so he can just talk about Godzilla.
I really don't know if I can fill a whole 30 minutes with words.
I think you could when it's Godzilla.
You'll stretch him out and be like, Godzilla.
I mean, I did it for puppets. I guess I could do it for Godzilla.
You can comment on this episode in our Facebook group, on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Review us where you do. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at arjon.draws. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, me on Twitter at Aaron Smirks, and my other podcast, The Blacklist Exposed, and presenting Hitchcock. Remember, the next time you head to a theater to see Aladdin or Booksmart or Brightburn, buy popcorn.
What are we talking about anymore?
I think he's talking about his ass.
You never really can tell with me. Oh my God, like the spikes are so huge now.
Why? What is it up to? Is it too big?
That's what she said.
I mean, can it really be big? Too big?
Yes, it can.
Is it going outside the lines?
No, it's not going outside the lines.
Okay, then you're fine. That's all I need.
I'm fine.
All right, are you guys ready to do this here?
Let's get ready to rumble.
Everybody, what the fuck just happened? I just lost my train
of thought. Bring motivation or something.
I said it. Or not motivation. Act awake. Not let's go to WWE. Take it to WWE level, people. Let's get ready to rumble.
See?
How do those guys not choke?
You know, it's actually one guy and he owns the rights to those words. So they say he gets paid like $100,000 each time he says it.
I am not writing him a check. I am not.